Hi, this is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon. My guest today is Paul Tinknell of Napa's Tinknell and Tinknell Marketing Guru Wonderfulness. Paul, of course, is the blog's official marketing expert. And today we've got a very interesting subject. Paul, I want to read you some nutritional ingredients, some nutritional content of a very famous beverage sold internationally by one of the world's most popular companies. So this for per serving, this thing's got 370 calories. One serving has 19% of your recommended fat, 50% of your saturated fat, 15% of your cholesterol, and 7% of your sodium. My God, Paul, let's get the news media. Let's get all these magazines. Let's get the Centers for Disease Control, and let's get this stuff stopped.
Absolutely. And by the way, let's throw some meaningless warnings on the product itself to just needlessly frighten people or confuse them or provide them with no context whatsoever. I think that would be perfect.
That's a great idea. Should we tell everybody listening what this product is now?
Absolutely. Be my guest.
That will be your Starbucks Cafe Mocha. So I did look it up in 2019. Starbucks has sold worldwide revenues $26.5 billion. So Starbucks by itself is what, about 3/5 the size of the entire U.S. wine business
industry. Yes.
Yeah. And does that say about how screwed up all of this wine and health stuff is? And I wanted to talk to you about this today because I know we've talked about it in the past and you've got some good opinions on it, some hard opinions. And why don't you talk, Paul, a little bit about how we ended up talking, why I wanted to talk about this to begin with.
Sure. Well, you know, you and I do, you know, exchange articles back and forth because we are both deeply concerned about the future of our wine industry. And, you know, one of those articles that I stumbled across was recently in Wired magazine and was about the link between breast cancer and drinking, which there is absolutely a link between breast cancer and drinking. But the article was written in a very sensational and inflammatory way, focusing on a group called Drink Less for Your Breasts. And while the mission of that organization is to be applauded, the tactics that they are using are in essence tactics to that a new temperance movement is using. They're essentially saying that, oh, there can be no quantity of wine safe for you to drink, so don't drink at all. Or I should say alcohol. They're not just focusing on wine. And that's not helpful because, as you just pointed out, you know, Starbucks Cafe Mocha has probably even more serious health issues if you were to drink that daily. And there would be no outcry from these, from these organizations about stopping it. Certainly the doctors would be up in arms over it. But so it's a very complex issue. And this article failed to provide that context. It failed to provide the complexity of the issue simply because it wanted to create sensation. And the problem is that we as an industry don't counteract that sensationalism. And we don't for a number of reasons, primarily because we don't like talking about it. It's hard to say, you know, negative things about the product that you're trying to sell. And it is a complex issue that requires people to pay attention. And we live in a time where attention is a premium and oftentimes not even a resource to be able to tap in many people. So it's you know, one of those conundrums that we have an industry have to face. But the cold, hard truth is that alcohol does have negative health effects associated with it. Moderate drinking has shown to have some positive health benefits to it. And we need as an industry to both acknowledge those facts and embrace it and talk to people about it honestly.
Well, and thank you for that. That's perhaps the most reasoned approach to this I've ever heard. What strikes me about, as I call it, and I stole this from Wine Industry Insight. What strikes me about the neo-prohibitionists, and perhaps all of the people behind it, don't remember what happened in 1919. But what strikes me is we tried this. It didn't work. Yes. It failed miserably. And yes. In fact, my favorite statistic of all of this, there is evidence that, in fact, incidence of alcoholism went up during Prohibition because it was so more difficult to get alcohol that when you got it, you drank to excess.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It backfired terribly.
So where do you think this is coming from, this all this sudden? And I want to say this straight out because I always say this. I know alcoholics. I've seen people die of alcoholism. It's a horrible, terrible thing. And don't tell me that I'm saying that all drinking is fine. What we're talking about here is drinking in moderation. Yes. And the idea that drinking, that alcohol is as bad as smoking a cigarette fails, even if you're just an ex-sports writer, in which nicotine is immediately addictive.
Right, right, right.
And alcohol is not.
Right. That's the problem, is that, you know, first of all, the temperance movement needs to paint it black and white, because that's the only way to get people, to scare people away from the product, and to get enough community and representatives in our community fired up enough to do something about it. It has to be an imminent threat from their perspective. But you, as you point out, there's a huge difference. Now, we can say smoking goes back, you know, centuries, but, you know, making alcohol goes back to the birth of our civilization. And that is not something you can just carve out of our society with, you know, simple wands of regulation and moralizing from the pulpit. That it's embedded in humanity. So, and, you know, I once read that almost every single culture on the planet figured out some way to ferment something into alcohol throughout the centuries that we have been evolving. And that's just as a testimony to the fact that we as humans seek it out and enjoy it. And the challenge for us in this industry here is to teach people how to enjoy it properly. And that goes to the marketing.
So, which is, of course, why you're here, because you are, of course, the blog's marketing guru. So, and I don't say this with any joy, the wine industry has done almost nothing about dealing with the fact that drinking is as bad as cigarette smoking. The wine stream media has done almost nothing about it. There is a general sense that if we ignore it, it will go away, which is completely stupid.
Yes. Yes.
So we've now appointed you to be the person in charge of the wine industry's, hey, wine, two glasses of wine with dinner will not kill you campaign.
Right.
What can we do? What would be some suggestions that you might have?
Well, I do think we as an industry need to tackle the regulation side of things directly and head on. You know, we have watched special interest groups and others come in and force absolutely meaningless warnings on our products. If we have to have warnings on our products, let's have them be meaningful. And I think we as an industry should come back and say, listen, we acknowledge, as I mentioned before, that there is potential health issues with alcohol consumption. So let's say that bluntly. You know, if we need to put it on our labels, that we should say, you know, research indicates that there's a link between alcohol consumption and certain forms of cancer and other health issues. Please drink responsibly and talk to your doctor. That's sound advice. And likewise, you know, we need to then tackle that messaging in ways that gets through to the campaign. Because right now, every single company has a little tiny in micro print on every single advertising, please drink responsibly. which is about as meaningless a phrase as contains sulfites. It tells me nothing. What does drinking responsibly mean? You know, that's something we should have a campaign. Like you said, have two drinks at dinner, or drink only with food, or, you know, certainly don't drink and drive. Those are things that are saying how to be responsible. And what does a drink mean? A drink means a glass of wine, a bottle of beer, you know, a can of seltzer. Those are the things that we need to put in people's minds, saying so that they have the understanding of what moderation is. And moderation is different for everybody too. Again, I you know, we need to stress that. It's not a simple formula. You need to go ahead.
One of the things about the neo-prohibitionists and the new temperance movement that's surprised me in the lack of response is that they lump everybody who drinks in with those people who have had their driver's licenses suspended, who have the lock on the ignition of the car. And that would strike me as something. I happen to take very good care of myself. I eat properly. I eat very little red meat. Suck on that, temperance people. I eat a lot of grains. I walk every morning. And I have two glasses of wine with dinner. Please tell me what's wrong with my lifestyle. Why should I be lumped in with some person who's got 14 DWIs and who are always used as the example of we must curtail drinking?
Right. It's, again, because it needs to be, again, these temperance movement organizations need to paint it black and white. And, you know, if the goal is to stop people from drinking, they want to stop people from drinking. That two glasses at night is a threat to what they want to accomplish. I'm not saying that, you know, all the researchers that are working, you know, studying the issues of alcohol and cancer or health issues related to drinking in our society are trying to say no more drinking. I've read a great number of them that say, no, I enjoy wine at night with my meals. So it's just a matter of understanding who's behind these campaigns and what they are trying to accomplish. And then the industry should, through the Wine Institute and the Wine Market Council and all those, be able to prepare to counteract those black and white campaigns with the nuances necessary for the media to understand in simple terms. And that's where we're failing, because we don't have that, you know, rapid, you know, deployment force to tackle these kinds of sensational articles. We don't have anybody at all at home saying, you know, you know, as I wrote to Wired, there's nobody even that could say, hey, why don't you talk to, you know, this people and get all the facts. And there was nobody to even to refer that to. And that's a failing of our industry.
No, I've gotten that from the Wine Institute. We don't discuss wine and health.
Yeah.
They're very polite about it, but, you know, that's what they say.
Yeah. And that is to what advantage? That's where I would come back and say, what is the advantage of that? You talk about wine and law. Why is wine and health not an equal issue in our industry? It needs to be.
Let me just wrap all this up before we bore everybody with our ranting. of course, that'd be impossible with my ranting, of course. I did a freelance piece this week for Pix.wine. There you go, Pix. There's your plug. about a proposed a test going on in Europe for nutrition and ingredient labeling, a trial done by the biggest wine trade group and the biggest spirits trade group in Europe. And they're trying to get ahead of what are going to be EU regulations that everything is going to have to, all alcohol is going to have, or almost all alcohol is going to have nutrition and ingredient labeling. And it's a brilliant, I mean, it really is a brilliant plan. It's going to use QR codes so that everybody younger than me will be able to figure out how to look and see that a glass of wine has 125 calories. And hang on, I'm going to get my piece of paper here. 125 calories, no fat, no saturated fat, no cholesterol, and no sodium. And it struck me that these are trade groups in Europe that want to get this done, that want to tell people what's in their product. We're here in the States, and you know, it's a good thing I don't have the free blog anymore, because I get those nasty emails and cancellations. We're not putting ingredient labels online. It's stupid.
You're right. The Europeans are just generally smarter at getting on ahead of certain regulatory issues. And that is one of the ways that this industry could be tackling the health messaging around wine, by clearly stating what is in wine. And I the idea of a QR code and getting out ahead of the FDA and the FTC on this issue and saying, look, it will be happy to put this information, make a uniform, you know, system of conveying that information to people, whether it's digital or not, and clearly stating what is in the wine would alleviate a lot of people's misunderstandings about how wine is made and then what is in the glass when you pour it. And we're even losing this message thing internally because as you know, I'm not a huge fan of the natural wine movement. And yet the natural and low intervention wine people are actually assaulting our very industry by messaging people that everybody is sticking horrific chemicals and bizarre animal ingredients in wine, and they don't do that. So their wines are naturally better. And that's, you know, not helping the issue at all. Natural wine and low intervention wineries have at it and make hay with what you're doing, but to contrast yourself and put the rest of the industry in a wrongfully negative light is not helping the issue. And putting ingredients somewhere easily accessible by consumers, it would counteract that problem immediately. And it would be one of those ways when, you know, you and I have been worried about how wine is losing, you know, cachet with millennials and Gen Zers. They are interested in what they're eating and drinking. They want to know what they're putting in their bodies. And so that's one way to win back some of those younger consumers by saying, hey,